This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, from Egypt to Wisconsin, is New York next? Breaking the silence, New York City's mass protest against budget cuts.
But now, while Albany budget negotiators reach agreement, the real question for the public is how much pain and suffering are legislators prepared to hit us with? We'll analyze the budget and especially its likely impact on New York City, where Mayor Bloomberg, while sitting on a $3 billion budget surplus, is threatening major cutbacks and thousands of layoffs. Bloomberg, like the governor, refuses to consider a millionaire's or a securities transfer tax to prevent a slash-and-burn policy.
In an otherwise subdued budget protest this year, the Professional Staff Congress of CUNY led an Albany protest in which 33 people were arrested. Way to go. They sat down and blocked access to the New York State Capitol's executive chamber, demanding Albany not pass an austerity budget that pays for a hefty tax break for wealthy citizens. We're joined by Barbara Bowen, President of the Professional Staff Congress at CUNY, and James Parrott, Deputy Director and Chief Economist for the Fiscal Policy Institute.
James, I must say, last night I have never seen such backslapping and goodwill. My goodness. Well, what actually was agreed to?
There was an agreement to close a budget gap that was about $9 billion, largely with budget cuts. The governor made a strong argument from his perspective for not continuing a temporary increase in the income tax on high-income people that only affects the wealthiest 2 or 3% of New Yorkers and would generate about $5 billion a year and would have obviated the need for pretty substantial cuts in many areas of the state budget. School aid got cut quite a bit on top of cuts the last 2 years. Medicaid rolls, which have been growing because of the recession, got cut, a 10% across the board cut in many state agencies that will result in curtailed spending or significant layoffs in the public sector workforce. A lot of cuts in human services, a lot of cuts in higher education, as Barbara can talk about. And one of the areas where the budget refuses to do anything in this, you know, this very dire economic situation where unemployment is still very high. The state couldn't find the money to raise the public assistance grant by 10%, which was something that had been committed to 3 years ago. The governor decided that he couldn't fund that. Instead, he had to go forward with not extending the high-income tax cut in a year when the very wealthiest are also benefiting from the continuation of the Bush income tax cuts at the very tops.
Barbara, I feel like I'm living in a surreal world in which people are just walking around as if nothing is going on, as if these cuts are not real in any kind of sense. There's been less dialogue this year about massive cuts than we've had years ago when the cuts were a small proportion. What's your take on the budget non-debate that's been happening?
It's a complicated question because it has to do with the responses of other unions during this budget cycle. Decisions that they made, they participated. For instance, the healthcare union participated in a separate discussion and negotiation about the cuts delivered to healthcare. There was not the kind of protest that is normally seen from them and also from
That's
some other unions.
That's 1199.
Yes, mm-hmm. SEIU 1199 East. What's more striking is the need that we felt as the union that represents the CUNY faculty and staff. We were not willing to be silent this time. We looked around. We saw that there was not an enormous outcry, certainly not the kind of outcry that should accompany this direct attack on working people, on the middle class, on the poor, on the working class, and on the whole state's economy. This austerity budget attacks the state's economy, is a way for us not to grow after the Great Recession. We felt in our union that there was not a response commensurate with that kind of attack. We just took it on ourselves, and that's why after doing all kinds of necessary and essential actions, such as writing to our legislators and lobbying and rallying and going to Albany and sending thousands and thousands of letters and faxes, we still felt that we had to escalate the level of our protest. We went to Albany with 175 people and were willing to risk arrest in order to demand the passage of a budget that did not impose austerity. We do not believe the fight is over yet, and part of the reason we did that was to hope that we and others can raise the fight to the next level as it continues.
James Parrott, I'm trying to grapple with some more of the implications from the kinds of cuts, because the money that was restored is really de minimis. It's very insignificant. So, James, could you lay out for us what really are the substantive cuts and what the implication for the communities in the city will be?
There had been cuts across the board in all state agencies. The social services, human services area sustained heavy cuts. There were restorations of about $90 million, but that was just a fraction of cuts proposed. There were special cuts in aid in human services and general revenue sharing that come to New York City that will result in less funding for senior centers, for rental assistance in the homelessness area in New York City. The mayor has indicated in his preliminary budget that he's not going to offset very many of those cuts, so we can expect even greater cuts from a ninth or a tenth round of city budget cuts. In the public assistance area, in areas that had been funded through the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, where funding from the federal government had increased during the recession as part of the stimulus program, but it's $5 or $10 or $20 million more in a host of areas to fund home visiting and intensive case services, nurse family partnerships, preventive services, transitional jobs programs, displaced homemakers programs. A lot of those either got cut pretty steeply by 50% or 66% by two-thirds or zeroed out entirely in the budget. So in a lot of areas, you're not talking about a huge amounts of money, but it adds up. It's just hard to fathom in this recovering state economy where income growth in New York State was the strongest of any state in the country in 2010, even with our high-end income tax increases, that the governor and legislative leadership couldn't find it, you know, in their hearts to continue this pretty nominal tax increase in order to avert these pretty stark budget cuts. And Barbara makes a good point. We have a very fragile economic recovery in terms of the labor market situation. Unemployment is very high. A lot of people have been unemployed for a long time, you know, well over 6 months or over a year. This budget will likely translate into several thousand state worker layoffs. The decreased education aid will result in increased teacher layoffs around the state. We've already seen about 30 or 40,000 cutbacks in state and local government workers in the last 18 months. So this is going to slow down a very tepid recovery. Meanwhile, income growth at the top just continues to roll along.
Because there was the combination of cuts and a tax break, because that's what's really happening, a tax break for the richest 2 or 3% of New Yorkers, it made the issue unbelievably clear and made the moral imperative about standing up especially clear. Because in this budget, the governor, the legislature had the choice of simply continuing an existing tax on a surcharge on a certain portion of the income of the highest about 3% of earners in New York State. And instead of doing that, they decided to give a tax break to those New Yorkers while laying off teachers, cutting classes at CUNY, making it hard for students to get an education. And that's in the state that has the largest income inequality in the country. At a time that we have tremendous income inequality, New York State has the highest income inequality. And one of the primary vehicles for a century and a half in this city of doing something about that income inequality, of moving oneself out of poverty, has been CUNY. To cut CUNY with that level of income inequality is immoral, it's unjust, and we intend to continue fighting it.
If you could just be a bit more specific about the cuts on CUNY.
The governor had called for a 10% cut to the community colleges and the four-year colleges. Only part of that is being restored for the community colleges, from what I hear. And so far, we're hearing no restorations of that 10% cut for the four-year colleges of CUNY and SUNY. So it's really devastating at a time when it's not only this year's cut that we're suffering from, but the cumulative effect over the last 3 years, including this one, will be about $1 billion of cuts to SUNY and CUNY. That's $1 billion taken out of the opportunity for people to have a higher education, a college degree.
Jim, well, rent regulations and their continuation expansion and doing away with vacancy decontrol, et cetera, those certainly weren't in the budgets. I'm just befuddled at the homogeneity here, at the goodwill. Why were they so jovial?
I look at this, and I see what's going on at the federal level, the state, and the local level in the United States and in certain European countries. And there's clearly, in the midst of, you know, while the Great Recession technically is over, we certainly haven't recovered. We're certainly not in a great recovery. We still have a situation of very high, prolonged unemployment, probably objectively the worst economic situation since the 1930s, except for 2009. So it's a little bit better than that, but it's still pretty bad. So the prescription for budget policy at all these levels is austerity. And I can understand that if I were a Republican, because there the strategy is like what happened in 2010. If there's a weak economy, then people will vote the incumbents out. And in 2012, the Republican strategy clearly is that people will be so fed up with an economy that's not going anywhere and still mired in, for all intents and purposes, the Great Recession, and vote the incumbent out of the White House. But how, in a Democratic state like New York, you arrive at a policy of austerity is befuddling, to use your term.
Well, the only real dissent that I heard was Mayor Bloomberg, and we have this argument between Bloomberg and Cuomo now. It's just, let's God know who to believe when thieves fall out, but Bloomberg is saying that the city is cheated and he's going to have to make more layoffs.
Well, he's playing chicken with the state, I think, is more to
the point. Well, the question is, James, what do you think is going to be the impact of this on New York City going forward and the city budget?
We're likely to see a further round of new cuts. There certainly wasn't enough increased education aid to prevent the proposed layoffs that the mayor had in his preliminary executive budget. And clearly, the mayor's trying to get a change in legislation that would give him control over who to fire in the education system. So if you've got layoffs on the table and you can threaten that we're going to lose good teachers who might not have that much seniority unless we change the law, you know, he's going to continue to use that as leverage to try and get state law. The fact is the city budget should be a lot better off than the state budget because the city has been able to weather the recession better because it has a large property tax base where the revenues haven't been as volatile on the downside as at the state level where the income tax is the main tax. So with some minor adjustments on the revenue side, the mayor could have a pretty decent budget. So we'll see in the coming city budget battle whether or not the council can push the mayor on that a little bit so to forestall any teacher layoffs and to make sure that we have adequately funded child care centers, senior centers, and so on.
Why hasn't there been more vigorous protests? And I commend those people who did engage in passive resistance and nonviolent resistance to the budget and risk and were arrested. But why isn't there a greater upheaval? And
you know, it was a serious risk that we took, and our members took that with us, and we're proud of them.
Indeed.
And
indeed.
Of course, it doesn't compare to the risks that people have taken historically in labor and community struggles.
It was a wonderful. Ken and I reveled in the commitment that it demonstrated.
But to answer your question,
begin a process of it also.
Exactly, to begin a process. We hope that it will begin a process, and that's what we are looking to do. Why hasn't there been more protest? I think it might be more fruitful to ask, how can we create more protest now?
Mm-hmm,
is
mm-hmm.
it possible that with this strikingly cruel and naked decision by the legislature, as you say, together with the governor, to impose pain on the poor and the working class and the middle class, while allowing the rich and the richest to further consolidate their wealth, will that striking decision, plus the actions of some who've begun to act, enable a broader movement to arise? Will it finally be that once that is laid bare in the way that it was laid bare with the chuckling legislature, you know, with the governor backslapping, as you said, where those common interests really lie and who is on whose side, will that enable the other 97% of us who are not the direct beneficiaries of this budget and who are in fact the victims of it, will that allow us to rise up and make ourselves heard? And I'm hoping that just as in Wisconsin, where there was a direct and strikingly clear, almost breathtaking attack on working people, that this budget, which is a breathtaking attack on working people, will enable us together to rise up and fight back. That's what we're looking forward to. It's already starting. This week, there's a peaceful occupation of the Capitol. Groups are leaving from New York in buses to go up to Albany and do a protest and rally there and do a peaceful occupation of the Capitol. We hope that that will grow and protests will grow from there, because this should not be allowed to stand, a situation where austerity is imposed on the working people and the middle class, the poor, in order to pay for capitalism's crisis.
We've been speaking with Barbara Bowen, president of the Professional Staff Congress at CUNY, and James Parrott, deputy director and chief economist, the Fiscal Policy Institute. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to go straight to, hey, a protest from Egypt to Wisconsin. Is New York next in breaking the silence? New York City's mass protest against budget cuts, buoyed by the new spirit of rebellion flowing from Egypt to Wisconsin. Thousands of students, workers, and community members from a wide coalition of organizations rallied at City Hall Park.
The rally was followed by a march on Wall Street to demand higher taxes on the rich to prevent budget cutbacks. This was the first major New York City demonstration in an otherwise muted budget debate, despite the grim consequences of the city and state proposed cuts.
Let's go to the demo.
Who's got the power?
We got the power.
What kind of power?
People power.
What kind of power?
People power.
What kind of power?
People power.
They say cut back, we say
fight back.
They say cut back, we say
fight back.
I want to introduce to you a student to talk about what's going on in the schools. Roy Ben Musha from Hunter College.
I am a graduate student at Hunter College of the City University of New York. I organize with Hunter Fights Back, a coalition of student groups aimed at restoring free tuition, open admissions, and a fully funded operating budget to CUNY. Yeah! Some have argued that because we are in an economic recession, we can't demand basic rights like food, housing, job, or an education, because we must make something called concessions, each giving a little bit in order to revive our economy. Let me ask you, did Wall Street have to make concessions when they received hundreds of billion dollars out of our pockets? Did the CEOs have to make concessions when they received $17 billion in bonuses out of our pockets? Why is it always the working class people of this city that have to make the concessions? Some say that we should not invoke class warfare. Some won't even concede that we're working class. We're lower middle class or upper middle class. Do you work for your money?
Yeah.
My brothers and my sisters, we are working class. Because there are some people who do not work for their money. They get it off of our sweat and our labor. Some people say that we shouldn't invoke the anger of the working class, that our anger is our own personal problem, and that we should medicate ourselves with retail therapy. But I am proudly united in anger with my working class brothers and sisters. The time has come to demonstrate our significance. The time has come to raise the arm of student and labor by occupying everything. We have to get into our streets, into our schools, into our financial and our legislative buildings. The time has come to show the world that if we run this city, we can shut it down.
Shut it down. The vice president of the Transportation Workers Union, make some noise for Kevin Harrison.
I'd like to talk to you about what Andy Cuomo and Scott Mubarak Walker are trying to do to us. What they're trying to do is end civilization for the rest of us. They think that they can have a civilization without schools, without public transportation, without hospitals. They are the barbarians at the gate. We have to stop them. We're the only hope for the people of New York. They're trying to blame us, saying that the corporate structure is not to blame, that the billions in dollars that were given to them, both in war costs and in bailouts and in bonuses and in tax release and in being a pain in the ass, did not cause our crisis. We did not cause the crisis. We are the victims. We built a huge infrastructure that they want to destroy because they don't care about you. They don't care if you walk to work, die in the street, or have no education. They just don't care. And it's time for us to stand up and fight back. Public workers are not a new elite. They're gonna try to divide and rule us, and if we don't do that, they're gonna lose. Stand together, fight, make the rich people pay for their crimes. Either you're with us or against us, and there are no compromises. So you're all working class heroes. You're all going to stand up and fight, and you're in solidarity, and they want us to work for less and less and give up what civilization we have. Well, we're going to say no divide and rule. We want the rich to pay for their crisis.
This sister that I'm about to introduce, she is here representing Community Voices Heard. Her name is Pam Brown.
We, the most vulnerable of New Yorkers, are here to raise our voices at City Hall about how Mayor Bloomberg's budget will cut social services and hurt us, the low-income families. It is imperative that all New Yorkers realize that this is a revenue crisis, not a budget crisis.
Yeah!
We need to be raising revenue rather than cutting social services. High-income New Yorkers need to pay their fair share.
Yeah.
The budget cannot be balanced on our backs.
Yeah.
The city should not look at the state's desire to implement full family sanctions as a way to save money.
Yeah.
This means children will starve and be homeless. The city should also eliminate indentured servitude called work experience programs such as WEP and replace it with real living wage jobs.
Yeah.
Work experience workers and transitional workers cannot be used to cover work that is being done by full-time union employees. There are a bunch of luxury condos empty. We need to have low-income families given those apartments. They belong to us. The city should save money from spending $3,000 a month for motels and shelters and putting people in real homes. It will save billions of dollars and keep working families intact. Who has the power?
We got the power.
What kind of power?
People power.
Who has the power?
We have power?
What kind of power?
People power. We right on, right on, right on. I want you to introduce a speaker who's from DC 37. So I know my AFSCME people are here. And you know what? Aspen was born in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
And they're trying to break it in Wisconsin. They're trying to break it everywhere, right?
Yeah.
But they cannot break us, can they?
No.
So welcome Oliver Craig, the Associate Director of VC37.
I'm here today on behalf of Lillian Roberts, our Executive Director. Your fight is our fight. We've been telling this mayor and we've been telling the various governors for 8 years that they're wasting the taxpayers' money, contracting out jobs. They're just taking billions of dollars. We just had a scandal with City Time. Somebody had stolen $80 million from the city of New York. But yet they want to cut your classes, take your jobs, and send you into the street. We have sued the city, we're suing the state, and we'll sue anyone else. We're going to continue to be here with you in demonstrations. We have library workers, people who work in the hospital system, in housing, people who work as architects and engineers, and or every kind of a job you can think of. They want to lay them all off. Fight on. We have the students, we've got labor, and we've got the community. You can't beat us all. Don't let them cower you. We're going to win. What are we going to do? Fight. Fight.
He's a city council person for New York City. He represents East New York. Councilman Charles Barron.
Tax the rich. Tax the rich. Tax the rich. Bloomberg must go. Cuomo must go. Whose streets? Whose money?
Our money.
Whose children?
Our children.
Whose streets?
Our streets.
Tax the rich.
Tax the rich.
Brothers and sisters, they are lucky that we staying behind these gates. Because they are lucky that we come in peace. But there is gonna come a time where we say enough is enough is enough. They don't have to cut service. There's a stock transfer tax that's already on the book, and they collect $14 billion for them crooks on Wall Street and give it right back to them. Keep the money for the people. And don't vote for a budget that cuts the people and gives the rich a break. But right now, we're gonna take it to Wall Street, and they're projecting another $20 billion profit on Wall Street. I say tax the rich and take the other crooks and put them in jail where they belong for ripping off the people. Tax the rich.
Tax the rich.
Tax the rich.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.